It's late at night. But the mission here at the Air Force Base Hashimara never ends. These two pilots have been deployed for a sortie on the Rafale fighter. Night operations are common here.
Unlock. Only free to move. Uplock open. Additional speed van.
Hashimara, located in the narrow sliver of land called the Chicken's Neck, is a frontline airbase that defends Indian airspace against the threat of a growing Chinese military presence across the line of actual control in this region. The pilots here have often detected Chinese fighters from across the LAC. For now, there's a strained peace. No fighter from either side approaches to within 10 kilometers of the line of actual control.
Hello and welcome to a very special program. We are here at the Hashimara Air Force Base of the Indian Air Force with the 101 Squadron, which flies the Rafale fighter aircraft. You can see a Rafale behind me. On this program, we'll give you a full sense of the young squadron pilots as they get set to meet India's challenges on the China frontier. The squadron is fully operational, fully active. They've taken part in exercises abroad as well. We'll be talking to the young officers. We'll also be talking to the Air Officer Commanding-in-Chief of the Eastern Air Command to give you a full idea of the Indian Air Force and its preparation in this area.
Group Captain Abhishek Tripathi is the commanding officer of 101 Squadron. This morning he heads to the briefing room. Five pilots, including him personally, have a mission. They're scheduled to take off within the hour.
2100 US, safety height 20,000 feet. Tista Bravo firing range not active. Binaguri range active till 1700 US, safety height 3000 feet. Flight level 200 to flight level 260 is buffer zone facilitated.
Surat is 200 cloudy, tempo TSI. Weather warning for thunderstorm rain, poor visibility and low clouds till 0730 hours. Patna 6 km cloudy, tempo CM1, tempo broken 012, CM1 condition.
Within minutes, the pilots are off to kit out, wearing their G-suits before marching across the tarmac to their waiting jets.
101 Squadron has recently participated in many international exercises. Flying in these exercises gives us immense exposure of basically doing the similar things, but in different manner. This also gives us an opportunity to demonstrate our capability and might to the rest of the world. We have been able to successfully integrate this aircraft completely to its potential with our already existing arsenal. As far as the international exercises goes, IAF has always been at the forefront. However, with the advent with this aircraft addition, it definitely gives you an edge in terms of technology and situational awareness as it magnifies manifold. And the effect on our combat effectiveness and all our combat elements in the recent exercise have been visible, and also the IAF has been able to stand out and been exceptional in these exercises in the recent past.
The fighters here have a sortie lasting an hour. The jets taxi out of their shelters and head to the runway. The Rafale is a multi-role fighter. The Indian Air Force operates two squadrons of Rafales. There are a total of 36 jets. The IAF has two Rafale squadrons, one in Ambala and one in Hashimara.
The Indian Air Force operates two squadrons of the Rafale aircraft, one at Ambala, north of Delhi, and one, the 101 squadron over here in Hashimara. And as we enter the squadron headquarters over here, here's the message. Falcons, that's the name of the squadron, seek and destroy. Through the Falcons gate pass the youngest, oldest, boldest, and the finest fighter pilots in the world.
The Falcons have a very special guest, the Air Marshal, who has the awesome responsibility of heading all of India's air defences across the Eastern Command.
Well, they say that the Indian Air Force is one large family, and it is true in a sense, and one of the key members of that family is the Air Officer Commanding-in-Chief. We've got the Air Officer Commanding-in-Chief of the Eastern Air Command, Air Marshal S.P. Dharkar. Wonderful to have you and talk to us. And it's great to be here in Hashimara. I believe you've been here before.
I have. In fact, I've operated from this very tarmac while I was commanding a MiG-27 squadron.
Right. And so the 27 to the Rafale, a huge transition for the Indian Air Force.
And a wonderful one at that.
It is. And you've had a chance to actually be in the aircraft as well. What does it feel like?
Oh, well, I guess you have more experience in that count than I do.
But I've flown this recently. We can trade jobs, sir, anytime that you like.
I won't give this up for anything.
I didn't think you would. But what does the Rafale feel like?
It's an exceptional aircraft. And the interface is almost out of the world.
Right.
And what a transition that was. I mean, like I told you, I flew MiG-27s out of here.
Yeah.
And if I had even 1/10 of what the Rafale has, would I have been that much more capable than I was at that time?
You know, as part of your responsibilities, you know, at the larger level, of course, there's the entire war fighting business. But you are the father figure at a very basic level to so many air bases in the northeast of the country. And so these visits are important, right? What is it that you try and do?
Well, essentially, first is to get a good connect with what's happening at the field level. And the second, of course, is also to understand how the field is managing to do what it requires to and what it requires from us at command headquarters to be able to do it better. And I guess that is best achieved when you actually go out and meet the relevant people at field level and get their direct insights rather than that Chinese whisper which happens when you get reports and returns and the like, which is simply not good enough.
Yeah. And it's also an opportunity to hear firsthand from the youngest pilot or the youngest men and women that you command.
Oh, absolutely.
And not just officers, non-officer ranks as well. You make it a point to interact with everybody.
Absolutely. No, when I said to interact with field level, I meant everybody. I meant every person who's here to work for the Air Force.
Yeah.
We interact in that manner. Yes.
Lots of Rafale pictures everywhere over here.
Oh yes, I'm certain they're proud of them.
This entire base has been sort of restructured in a sense with the Rafale in mind.
Quite, and a lot of the technical infrastructure has come up, fresh infrastructure. This complex is new. The sun shelters in front are so also.
Right.
And a lot of the background technical infrastructure required to look after the Rafale is also, of course, spanking new.
All right, so your squadron pilots over here.
Wonderful. Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. What a pleasure it is to be here. Great, come along. Let's sit around and maybe we can chat for a while. Well, gentlemen, as always, it's always fun to be back at Hashimara. The last time I was here was not too long ago, and I did meet some of you here at that time. But then I see a few new faces as well. You tell me, what have you been up to at Hashimara these days?
Flight Lieutenant Aman Pawar. My question is regarding initial days of yours, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Duties and responsibilities of you being a flying officer and flight lieutenant in your time.
No. We started as pilot officers.
So that is the first thing, sir. But regarding that, how you see the change in the duties and responsibilities for today's generation and pertaining to our fleet as well, sir?
Pertaining to your fleet. To be fair, we flew simpler aircraft. And I think we had more time than you people have. You people are a lot more busy than we were. But I guess it's important because I guess you have that much more to soak in and your aircraft are that much more capable. And so you have that much wider a canvas to paint. Life was simpler for us.
So I think me being the intermediate generation between them and you, I think I see it as earlier it was a lot about neuromuscular coordination.
Yes.
And the hand-eye coordination, wherein now it is more about situational awareness, the interpretation of the plethora of information that you have in the cockpit.
That entire ambit has widened so very greatly that partly what takes that time away, I guess, because it is not simple to master. When is that solo party? I want to be part of it. Today? Oh, that sounds wonderful. We're going to watch. Can I help with the dunking also?
The pre-flight meals it's something that's always done, right?
No, it's a very important part of it because given high-performance aircraft, having a pre-flight meal is essential to ensuring that you're physiologically capable of doing what the aircraft is capable of doing. And, this is where these people enjoy a pre-flight meal, though I notice it is rather an intricate pre-flight meal. To come.
This is that they give you what you would like to have.
I told him wherever he goes, he's feeding not more than 2 or 3 people in a day. Here, this guy is feeding 30 hungry people, 3 meals a day. The best of reports.
Without
a
doubt.
And so the CEO will tell you, I have never asked.
No, I believe you, of course.
You know, one of the toughest decisions which a fighter pilot has to make in the morning. As to which type of egg is going to be. Single, double, boiled, omelet.
You miss the old MiG-27. There are a ton of them over here.
I wish some of them could fly.
Yeah,
But it kind of had come to its end, the end of its useful life.
The squadron itself is one big family. Spouses of pilots here complain that the pilots spend more time at the squadron headquarters than with their families. But there's a sense of shared happiness and there is celebration when a member of the team achieves something special.
One of the most incredible experiences for a young aviator is the opportunity to fully convert to a particular type of aircraft and fly solo. You know, we've come over here at a time when one of the young flyers in the squadron is solo on the Rafale aircraft, and that means there's a bit of a ceremony. What happens now? So he's the victim, right?
Yeah, he is the victim. Yeah.
So there's a victim in this as well. So we need to keep that in mind. Go ahead. What happens?
Good afternoon, everyone. Today I will, as we all know, this is a prestigious moment that we knock off the reheats from Flying Officer Kunal Chaudhary's shoulders. As we all know, this is a remarkable feat for him, that as he has been burning his Jet A1, his midnight oils and whatnot, just to achieve this remarkable feat, that is going solo, first time ever in this mightiest of the aircraft in the Indian Air Force fleet, Rafale. So, without further ado, I will just request He-Man and I'll just do the honors, please.
Right.
Yeah, so, first of all, please, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Casey, how is the Josh?
Casey.
Hi!
But there we go.
Now, one more time. How's Josh?
Hi! Sir!
Now,
I would like to request Group Captain Shri Tripathi, Commanding Officer 101 Squadron, to give us the Soro patch. This is one of the feeds that we get, along with the rituals, of course.
Congratulations, good show. Many more on many more types.
Congratulations.
A squadron is like a home away from home, wherein we don't have a concept of colleagues. We have a concept of either brothers and that brotherhood. So from starting from top to bottom, it feels like a big family, along with the wives and children of the squadron. They are a big family. So there are a lot of times when we get together and have a good social conversation and a good social affair.
Away from the camaraderie, the job at hand is clearly overwhelming. The Rafale pilots at 101 Squadron know the challenges that they face day in and day out. Across the line of actual control, just minutes away when a fighter is airborne, lie massively upgraded Chinese air bases. These images, broadcast by NDTV last year, show how the Chinese have forward deployed state-of-the-art fighters and a vast array of drones. They've also built up the infrastructure at these bases. The pilots at the Falcon Squadron know that they have the platform to pierce China's defenses and strike targets if things get out of control. They train for this mission constantly. The Rafale is widely considered one of the finest ground attack fighters in the world.
Rafale is a very modernized aircraft in which the man-machine interface is very apt. That means that the pilot is very comfortable performing all the duties that is expected out of him. So flying a Rafale coming from a Bison background is a leap forward in terms of technology and the execution of the mission and the varieties of roles that can be performed in a single mission. The number of roles performed by the aircraft are numerous. And because the aircraft is omni-role, you can perform all those roles in a single mission and you are expected to do that. So as to train yourself in performing all the roles in a single mission is a very big task
yeah.
that the aircraft is asking from you, and to do that is very interesting.
Maintaining these jets is as important as training for war. The Rafale is generations ahead of legacy fighters in the Indian Air Force when it comes to maintainability. It takes just 2 hours to change the engine of one of the fighters. In older Russian types, it would be a process that could last days.
We are the maintenance crew, and maintenance crew working on the Rafale aircraft have gained the insight knowledge on the aircraft since 2019 aircraft is flown, and every air crew is trained, adequately trained, and all the air crew, maintenance crew can ensure that the serviceability of the aircraft at highest level and ready for the deployment any given time. Yeah. This aircraft is very maintenance friendly with a short turnaround time. During operation it can be deployed very short notice. Other aircraft, it is a very long procedure to replace the engine, but in the Rafale, it will take only 3 to 4 hours to change the engine and the aircraft can go for the flying.
A decade back, I had had the opportunity to fly on board the Rafale off the coast of Istres in France.
And you touch down normally? Speed?
120 knots in a clean aircraft. If you are very heavy, you can go up to 140, 155.
Right.
Depends
right.
On the store.
The sortie saw me fly low over the Mediterranean, including this hair-raising bit where we flew just feet of the deck of the sea in full automatic mode.
Now we turn left to the attack heading.
Yeah.
And the system tells me to go to attack.
Okay.
I stay autopilot because we are very low and the autopilot is much safer than me, even if I'm autopilot. Not that bad, huh?
Oh, it's amazing.
Since then, the acquisition of the Rafale has been a saga for the Indian Air Force, with the acquisition process finally being cleared by the Supreme Court. Many of the modes that the Rafale's radar operates with today were being tested at that time, a decade back. Today, the Rafale that the IAF operates is more advanced than any other variant in large-scale service and incorporates several India-specific upgrades. The aircraft can be upgraded even now to incorporate new tech to make it an even more lethal fighting machine.
Over the last several years, the Indian Air Force has faced an evolved set of challenges, both on the China front and on the Pakistan front. There is new technology, new threats. But the Indian Air Force is countering all of that. Joining us now to talk a little bit about where the Indian Air Force is in its area of responsibility, that is the Eastern Theatre, we're joined by a very special guest, the Air Officer Commanding-in-Chief of the Eastern Air Command, Air Marshal S.P. Dharkar. Thanks, sir. Wonderful to be here.
No, and thank Hashimara you so much with for having you. Me here.
You know, it is significant, of course, that we've deployed the Rafale aircraft in Hashimara, in the east of our country. There has been significant Chinese infrastructure build-up on their side. What sort of threat does their airbase infrastructure and other infrastructure represent to our interests?
Interestingly, actually, Eastern Air Command shares its boundaries with five countries. Mm-hmm. We start with Nepal, we go on to China, go on to Myanmar, go on to Bhutan and Bangladesh. And so, actually, infrastructure development is taking place all around us. On our own side also, I mean, we are not falling short on that count. And you would have noticed, and mm-hmm. so would your listeners, that a lot of infrastructure development is taking place in the Northeast as well. So in that terms, I guess infrastructure development goes on by every country, attempting to match whatever it needs in terms of economic development, in terms of infrastructure development, making available resources for its people. And I guess infrastructure development is well matched on both sides of every border.
And, sir, how well prepared are we in the Indian Air Force to defend against the evolving threats that we face from China?
The entire gamut of warfare continues to evolve. And I guess you don't look at any one threat significantly by itself. You look at an overall development strategy. And in that regard, here itself, from the Indian Air Force side, we are doing similar. If you look at the new inductions that we have, if you look at new tactics and procedures that we develop, if you look at new state-of-the-art mechanisms that we've introduced here. We have the latest aircraft we fly. We have two squadrons of the Rafale, one of which is deployed here. We have the S-400 deployed now. And I guess it's a continuous process. That's what we look at too.
China has focused a great deal on drone technology over the last several years, both in terms of the number, the quantity of manufacture, also the classes. Across from very small to very large. Again, what sort of threat does that represent and how is that a potential area of concern for you as you guard our airspace?
All emerging technologies, you talked about drone technology, whether it is drones, space, new IT, AI, they're all new technologies and they are increasingly being used for warfare. In that regard, you would have seen drone technology is proliferating all across the globe. I mean, you can look at whether you look at the Houthi rebels using drones significantly in their area, or you look at what's happening in the Russo-Ukraine campaign. Drone technology is proliferating all the time. And you get newer drones. You get, you've heard of cardboard drones lately. And, it's a challenge. And it goes in both hands. One, you try and also match up in terms of developing your own. And the second is that you try and evolve mechanisms or technologies to try and counter whatever drones you expect to face.
you'll find drones of every size and variety. And they're not restricted to the air domain at all. I mean, you find these days, you find unmanned vehicles on ground, you find them on surface, you find them under sea. It's a challenge. And we try and keep up with it.
And so evolution is the constant learning lesson.
Absolutely.
Also from the Ukraine war, I mean, we've seen so many new concepts being tried. The entire spectrum of warfare appears to have changed in many respects.
Absolutely.
Is that something that you think about, or the Air Force thinks about, looking at what's happening around and lessons as well?
Without a doubt, because, you know, till not too long ago, one expected wars in the modern world would be short and swift. But you look at it, it's been continuing from February of last year, and we are now almost 18 months into a campaign. And that is one major lesson that we need to take away, because all of national effort would be required on either side, whichever side is indulging in warfare, to kind of support the campaign, as also to withstand the onslaught. And I guess there are lots of lessons for us, including in the air domain, as to whether it was drones that you pointed out, or just the very fact about merging an air campaign with the land campaign, or about provisioning to assist the land campaign from air. There are multiple lessons for all of us. And we try and get the best of what information is flowing out of that campaign in order to continue to also look at it and how we will adapt it to use similar opportunities when they offer themselves in our area, or also to learn as to what an enemy could do and so try and cater for it.
Hey, Marshal, we are seated in this gigantic hangar in front of the Rafale aircraft. Now, this is it's fully been inducted into the Indian Air Force.
Absolutely.
We are ready to go to war with this.
Absolutely.
And that means that we've gone through the entire gamut of training over the last few years.
Quite.
And people don't understand that it takes time.
It's
not just acquiring the aircraft.
Absolutely.
So could you tell us a little bit about that process between when we first inducted the aircraft and now when we are ready to go to war with it?
Now, we've had the Rafale almost for 5 years. And given the fact that this is as cutting-edge technology as exists anywhere across the world today, and with the India-specific enhancements that have actually been incorporated into this particular variant of the Rafale, this is an extremely capable machine. And then along with it, if you don't train adequately, you would not be able to use the machine to its fullest extent. Towards that, I guess simulators have been a significant addition. And the Rafale simulator, one of which we have here itself, is an amazing device. It's a simulator that can do virtually everything that the aircraft can do and more, because there are some things you simply can't do on the aircraft without endangering both life and material. And in that regard, we started from a good selection set. We had the initial lot of our pilots and technicians train in France, and then we followed the trainer mechanism. They came back, and from then on, we have actually now built up a significant pool, both of aircrew technicians as well as background personnel, who are actually helping us to ensure that this cutting-edge technology is used to its very best.
Hey, Marshal, I've been interacting with your squadron pilots over here over the last couple of days, and I find that they are across age groups and across experience levels.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting that in the Indian Air Force, you aren't restricting your oldest or your quote-unquote best fighter pilots to your most potent platform. You're bringing in young people. Is there a reason that you're doing that?
To be fair to the pilots you interacted with, actually, I would like to believe they are the best.
Okay.
But it was not best by selection. Let's say we selected them across the board, mm-hmm. and we selected, of course, whom we assessed could take in that kind of training and actually take it to the next level. And therefrom, we expect that given the nature of the aircraft, the ability of the aircraft itself, its human-machine interface, and the ability of associated training aids that we have, I guess we'll make that best bunch that we can have. And by ensuring that they're across that entire spectrum, like you mentioned, we ensure that with continuity, we will have that kind of a rolling continuity enabled so as to continue using this aircraft well in the years to come.
Yeah. Marshal, training is obviously, at one level, the lifeline of the Indian Air
Without
Force.
Doubt.
No training. I mean, if you train hard in peace, then you can fight hard in war as well.
Without doubt.
How is that a very significant part of your responsibilities to ensure that, it's not just the aircraft, it's the men and women who pilot them, not just the Rafale, but every single platform, that they are of a certain level and they maintain that?
Quite. This is one thing very specific to the Air Force. Unlike other avenues, you find that the Air Force continues to do, even in peacetime, almost everything that it would do in actual operations or in wartime. And of course, the only little difference being in terms of using whether live weapons or you use simulated weapons or you use smaller caliber weapons in terms of training. But whatever they do almost on a daily basis is towards that training. And so there are distinct timelines, there are distinct milestones to be achieved, there are distinct number of various exposure opportunities to be given to each pilot so as to ensure that he has experienced that particular capability of the aircraft and utilized it and built up his own skills on that as we go along.
You know, when we talk about the induction of the Rafale, a lot of people would suggest that, oh, we've got the fighters and we've got the weapons. But in fact, there's a lot more than that. In addition to the India-specific upgrades, there's the entire training infrastructure. Yes. You mentioned simulators.
Yes.
But, you know, we've redesigned our air bases with this aircraft in mind. So for the moment, Ambala and Hashimara. So that's important as well, airfield upgradation.
Our airfields are also, in fact, we've spent almost two decades now improving our airfield infrastructure significantly, which helps us operate in poor weather. It makes our operations, especially takeoff and landing operations, that much safer. And given the fact that we have better equipment on board the aircraft, now we can actually go into a more robust 24/7 operating capability. We had a project called the Modernization of Airfield Infrastructure Project, which has kind of added quite a lot of significant landing aids and takeoff aids to our airfields, which allows us to operate in all kinds of weather. We've gone into the IACCS, yep, which helps us kind of merge all our air defense assets and provide a fused picture, which then provides redundancy, it provides greater awareness, it provides greater ability to detect and identify, and all in all enhances our capability.
Let's talk about IACCS. I was going to get to that. You know, domain awareness, sensors across a spectrum, you know, of what is available to us. How does this compare with airspace or domain awareness when you were a fighter pilot actively?
What a difference.
Fighter pilot till the day you retired. I mean,
Yes. No, but I'm not in active flying right anymore. But you're right. And it is quite a change. I mean, today it's almost seamless. Starting from about the mid to late 80s, what we've gone on is ensuring that we actually have radar cover through most of our landmass and beyond. And importantly, the IACCS now provides a fused picture, which then increases the overall capability of our controllers on ground to be able to identify an aircraft, to firstly detect that aircraft, identify him, and thereafter take appropriate action, as also provide redundancy. I mean, today somebody flying in this particular area could very well be controlled remotely from somebody sitting in Bangalore.
Right.
And it is that fused picture that provides that capability.
Yeah. We also train very regularly now with foreign air forces. What has that experience been? Let's talk about the Rafales and, if you like, with other aircraft as well in the fleet. Because it's learning at one level.
Without doubt.
But more than that, it's also about how good you are. I mean, we want to know that.
There are three important issues about, you know, exercising with other nations. First, of course, is putting your foot forward to kind of be that diplomat, yeah, in, yeah, air. Wherein it increases your interaction. It allows you the opportunity to mix up and get a good understanding of what they do, how they do it, how they go and improve their own TTPs,
yeah,
and so learn and adapt. Most importantly, however, what it gets us is that amount of confidence. It's one thing to believe you're good. It's much, much better to see that you're good when pitted against somebody capable or, yeah, possibly whom you thought was, yeah, equipped with a better platform.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And that confidence level really helps.
Air Marshal, the other system, of course, is the S-400, which we've acquired. You briefly alluded to that. It's part of a tiered defense system. So,
without doubt.
Again, it's not just planes in the air. It's also missiles being fired potentially from the ground as well. How has that, again, been a process of evolution? I mean, it has always been tiered at one level, but obviously the systems we have now are far more advanced than what we've had in the past.
What has happened is that given the additional capabilities that these modern systems have and the fact that we've been able to merge them into that kind of a network domain, which towards which the IACCS also provides a major impact, the S-400 allows you that opportunity to dominate a much larger portion of the airspace, as also probably to take it beyond your typical borders and so be able to both find that enemy aircraft well before he is a threat, as also tackle him before he can serve to launch weapons, which then makes air defense that much more robust. Alongside, of course, when merged with capable fighters, when merged with the IACCS, which allows you better control capability, it all becomes a well-fused singleton air defense network.
you know, we've also moved towards indigenizing a lot of our sensors, radar systems. We are developing, of course, radar systems for our Tejas aircraft as well. But we've made a lot of progress in the radar systems for example, surface-to-air missile systems. Is that indicative of a leap in our national engineering prowess?
Actually, it was surprising to find out that way back, almost about three decades ago, part of the TR modules for the AESA radar that was fitted on some of the high-performance American fighters were manufactured in Mangalore.
Really?
So it was not as though, in portions, it was not as though the entire radar was manufactured here, but portions of the TR modules were actually being made in India. So it was not as though that the technology did not exist or that we lacked the industrial capability to follow it up. But probably, since we were more reliant on procuring state-of-art systems, we had not given enough importance to developing our own. And I guess Atmanirbhar Bharat is where that seeks to go. We have the capability, we have the industrial base to go with it. I guess what was lacking was the emphasis to put it together. And that's what's happening now.
Would you not love to have a stealth aircraft in your arsenal?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, but then it's only human to want more.
Right.
And today is stealth, tomorrow could be sixth generation.
Yes.
And one could keep going on and on. Hypersonics are just around the corner. And that's how both warfare as also just humankind evolves. And it's always good to have what's the latest on the block. But more importantly, as we are seeing now, I guess it's even more important to have it built yourself.
One final question. Space is, to borrow the old cliche from Star Trek, the final frontier. But, you know, in a sense, it's true also.
Without
and it's
doubt.
True for the Air Force as well. You don't restrict yourself to terrestrial airspace. You restrict yourself to air and space as a force. So tell us a little bit about that aspect of
you know, there
thinking.
There is that continuum between air and space. The Kármán line is merely a line on somebody's thought process. It actually doesn't exist over there. And as you climb higher, that little transition from air to space is almost indiscernible. Which means then that considering aerospace as one common domain is an important aspect. And there are capabilities out there, there are technologies out there that actually make that merge even more simple. And so this entire gamut about difference between air capabilities and space capabilities ought to be quickly pushed back. Because aerospace is, I would believe, one continuous domain. And in that regard, it is an expansion of our own capabilities. And ISRO has some wonderful capabilities that it brings to the table. And it is important now that we start to harness those capabilities as much as some of the other countries around us are doing, so as to ensure that we actually make use of our own abilities towards improving our national defense strategy.
Thank you, sir. Thanks
Thank
very
you
much.
Very much.